Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Emily Peterson, coming to you from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 66, if you are counting. Not that I am. Episode number 66. And thank you all so much for listening. Joining me in the studio is my producer, Ann Hogan. Hi, Ann.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
All right.
How was your weekend? We just talked off air about how you hate that question, and then I immediately ask you because it's such a habit.
Well, it's not that I hate the question. Let me clarify. It's just that I feel like my memory goes blank when people ask me. But now that you kind of asked me before,
I've prepped you.
People are going to be like, "What is wrong with her?"
So how was your weekend?
It was great. I take classes over at UCB at Upright Citizens Brigade. Mm-hmm. So did a little bit of improv this weekend.
Amazing. I saw one of my heroes, Amy Poehler, and also a UCB person.
Sure.
On the Golden Globes.
Yeah,
I'm not even drinking.
Dude. No, yeah. I mean, she's definitely one of the ultimates. There's this show at the UCB called Ask Cat, and you never really know who's going to be the players there. And I went the day before my birthday, and she showed up. And so I consider it. So thanks, Amy Poehler, for coming after my birthday.
That's amazing.
Anyway, yeah.
Like,
so
my friend Amy. We hung out.
Me and Amy P. How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. I was defeated by popovers. I had a real situation. There are two couples that have been friends with for a very long time, and every couple of months, it is a couple's turn to host the other two couples for a sleepover dinner party. And this was our turn, and it was great.
Sounds fun.
It's really, really fun. Yeah. Everybody's food and drink people. So I made an incredible leg of lamb that I boned out and then rubbed the inside with some shallots and anchovy and then tied it, roasted it. It was delicious. And I was like, I want to make popovers to go with this. And I did something that I would advise other people against, and I'm going to confess because this is a confessional show, and I want my listeners to feel like that, like
you are safe here.
You are safe here, and I will be the first to admit that the first place that I went for a popover recipe was the internet, and I found a food writer who was writing for a publication. It wasn't a blog who has no oversight. It was someone who has an editor, and the head note was that they had tested or they had read every recipe for popovers and distilled down what they thought was going to be the ultimate popover recipe.
Okay.
So, for instance, some recipes call for the pan to be preheated. Others say you start in a cold pan. Some say you start in a cold oven. Whether or not you grease the pan with olive oil or butter. It's like meatballs. Everybody's got their like little secret ingredient.
Okay.
And this person claimed to have found this is it. These are all the, like, of all the different options that you can have, these are the ones that make the best popovers. So without any discernment on my part, I just went ahead and made them for the dinner party for my foodie friends.
Okay. Foodie and sleepovers, right?
Mm-hmm. It was a huge problem. So they puffed on the top, and I was like, they're doing it. This looks so cute. Because I should say, I've never actually made popovers before. And when I pulled them out of the pan, the part that was still in the popover pan, which I have like a real iron one that I borrowed from someone, they had shrunken. Like it looked like a shiitake mushroom stem, and then this like puff top, and the top was fine, but the base part was like as dense as trying to eat a pencil eraser. And I was like, these are really good. I was like, these are not popover.
Stop lying to me.
So now I feel like I have set myself up with a real challenge because I will not be defeated by a batter. I'm pissed. So
I've heard tell that I don't know who you got your recipe from, but that
I'm gonna protect their identity.
Okay, well, I hope I'm not saying the same person. I mean, I don't know. But Alton Brown apparently has like the popover recipe. He did like an entire entire hour devoted to like how incredibly like difficult and detailed they are, and like he swear. I mean, who knows? I don't know. You know, I'm not the
okay. That will
big
be the next
here.
Recipe that I try because I love him and Food Network because they are their audience is home cooks in the middle of right. America, they rigorously test those recipes so that people are successful, because that's like what they do. They want people to cook and it come out the way it looks in the picture.
So maybe in like a home kind of cooking way that could be that you do you want to
yeah
we,
okay.
I think we're getting a note flown in
from
our guests, and I'm not picking up on it very well, so apparently I got a note written down that says hot lard.
What better intro than hot lard? Jimmy Carbone, Heritage Radio's own host of Beer Sessions Radio, is here. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Hey. And yeah. Sam Barbieri is here, owner and chef of the Waterfront Ale House. Welcome.
Thank you.
Did I say that right? Waterfront Ale House? Okay. I wrote it down earlier as the Waterhouse Grill, and I was like, whatever you do, say
no.
it right the first
Water
time.
House.
Waterfront.
As long as you come to 30th guy. Street and 2nd Avenue.
All right. We will.
I love this. This was like this very... Anyway, go ahead.
So chime in on our hot lard is your popover.
Hot lard is the way I've always made a popover.
Okay, as in
beef.
You,
yeah,
wipe the inside of the pan with hot lard.
Yeah, nice hot pan, hot lard and cold batter.
Okay,
into a really hot oven, usually around 4-4.25.
Okay, so there are a
that's
lot
what,
of
that's
differences.
What
in
I have found that works
in the
at
hot
home
pan.
Or
okay,
do you think that that's something that you can do like at home and like a
sure,
home oven?
Sure, if you have a if you have a decent oven at home, absolutely.
And I have found that buying a oven thermometer and leaving it in my oven has made my oven a much better oven.
Yeah.
Because if you you know that your oven is off by 10 or 20 degrees, you can adjust for that and have a lot more success, which mine does. It's a little...
Especially if you're in a New York City apartment, that's probably not the greatest caliber of oven that you have
right.
in a rental apartment, and the dial is always going to be off by a few degrees. And those little inexpensive thermometers that you buy for the oven, buy one every year because
they
go sour too.
Mine has gotten, and I'll tell you, I took it back. I bought it at Sur La Table, and I took it back, and they were like, no questions asked. Here's a new one. Sorry about that. Yeah. It's like,
they get industry discounts, too.
I know.
I'm
a big fan. Yeah. Big fan. Okay, so you guys are here to talk about your new ebook called I Like Pig.
Well, the backstory is that we've organized an event over 5 years now called Pig Island, and it was on Governor's Island, and now it's in Red Hook in Brooklyn. And it brings together about 25 chefs a year. The main point of the event is that we buy pigs from New York farmers to support them, so they get the bulk of the money, and we're buying at a fair price. But the great joy is getting to work with chefs like Sam Barbieri, who's been in almost every year, and he works with the whole pig. I think you should talk about the process, because the few times he's done it, I mean, you know, he basically comes to Union Square a few days before the event, picks up his pig or pigs from the farmers, and kind of the magic starts when it goes back to Sam's kitchen. And there's 25 different recipes, each a different part of the pig. And Rachel Wharton, who's a great writer, James Beard Award winner, she wrote it with me and edited it. So she tested all the recipes, and there's some great photos by her boyfriend John Taggart. And in addition to Sam's recipe for the head cheese, which was on your website, they did
a couple
of photo essays, and they did, because Sam's also a competitive barbecue guy.
Mm-hmm.
So they did from soup to nuts his whole competitive barbecue program. So I would say, Sam, what's it like when you get the whole pig and the process you do for these kind of events and the recipes that you came up with?
We've been cooking whole hogs in competitions for about 15 years now. Unfortunately, my partner passed away, but he really got me into it once he let me try one. And I got interested. And what was really informative for us was going down south to these really large barbecue contests and having a camaraderie between the teams. And everyone is more than happy to tell you how you could come in second. But we learned a lot. And every time that we went to a competition, the first one I did was a national barbecue competition in Washington, D.C., right in front of the Capitol. First time we did it, we didn't know really what we were doing. We cooked a pig. We came in sixth, and we were ecstatic.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So we're like, oh my gosh, this is great.
So wait, how does the judging work? It's a panel of professional eaters, or is there a public vote? How does it work?
You have to be a certified judge. I am a certified judge in Kansas City and in Memphis. There's a criteria for the pigs, as there is for shoulder, ribs, and chickens. So they have to taste the shoulder, they have to taste the ham, and then they have to taste the rib. Or not the rib, the loin. I'm sorry. So we started just putting a rub on it, and then I learned to inject them. Then I learned to put different injections in different areas of the pig. Then I cooked on another team when we were in Memphis, from Carolina, taught me a lot. And we've just progressed and progressed and progressed.
Have you ever come in second?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever come in first?
Yes.
Wow.
I've been reserve grand champion.
Wow, that's amazing.
Which was very... very good for a New York City team.
Yeah, that's cool.
I say the least.
Yeah.
So, Jimmy, I am curious. We have to work a break in here. I think I'm going to ask you this question first, and we'll answer, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and talk about how to make head cheese. Will you talk a little bit about the process of making a cookbook as an ebook? Because it's something that I think about a lot in terms of traditional publishing versus where the market is going and how you came to decide to do it. Like, what was your thought process?
Sure. I mean, it started out where I had pitched a book kind of about local food and some of the purveyors I work with, whether it was Annie at Eagle Street Rooftop Garden or you know, some kimchi guys. And I realized that there was going to be a lot of work to get a book published because I wasn't an experienced writer. Mm-hmm. And so it turned out that I ended up going the ebook route. And with my friend Rachel Wharton.
So you've had no need for a publisher, no need for an agent, correct?
Well, I mean, what happened was I ended up kind of taking on the whole project. And I was lucky that Rachel Wharton, who I love and I'm friends with, who's a great writer, she was the first writer that I would have chosen to work with.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah.
And she and then her boyfriend, John Taggart, they went. What happened was is we already had a lot of the material. Because of the event, for the first 3 years of Pig Island events, we had probably 60 different recipes and you know, 40 or 50 chefs had participated, including Sam. So then Rachel kind of went through it and picked out, you know, wanted to pick out 25 different recipes that were from different parts of the pig. So that mm-hmm. that process wasn't so hard, and you know, she ended up, you know, testing each recipe and working through with the chefs, you know, the best recipes for the book. But the actual process of the ebook was very interesting because, you know, the ebook format's really set up for like putting a novel online. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And no one's really gone. I think the cookbook industry is still really into their print books because there's a lot of people buy them for gifts.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think that they want to develop the cookbooks so far as ebooks. So I think that what John and Rachel did on our production was they really went through in the design and the way the book feels, mm-hmm. so that this is probably one of the most interesting ebooks that has recipes and photos that you'll see.
It's really great.
They went way above and beyond what it's not just recipes online.
Right.
It's actually really nice interactive format.
So I asked for selfish reasons. I have worked with an agent and pitched a seafood cookbook, and the 10 cookbook cookbook publishers have said fish is over, no thank you. And I sort of put it on the shelf and was like, eh.
And pig's over too. And I had a meeting with Rizzoli last week because now we're like, well, we got the ebook, we're all ready to go, let's have a book. And they were like, well, we have a whole hog cookbook, we have a smoke cookbook. And I'm like, okay, we'll think about it.
Right.
But I think the publishing world is under a different pressure than you or I.
And so I'm looking at your book, which was super easy to download, $1.99, ilikepig.com. I'm looking at it on my web browser, and it's like, I love it. And I'm like, all of my recipes are written. I have friends who are food photographers, and just, I might call you up and ask you for some mentorship.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, if it's one thing the industry is thinking, oh, we want to sell the books, and people want to give them as gifts and put them on their coffee table, but people already are using, you know, they're going to Epicurious or other sites online mm-hmm. to get their recipes. So people are already using digital format to actually cook from.
Right.
So I don't think it's that radical. And I have a quote. There's a woman. We're also targeting like UK because we're trying to take the ebook to UK in the spring and mm-hmm. and check out some beer and cider and pig people. And a woman named Adrienne Treby emailed me. She's got a little meat shop in London called Crown and Q Meats. And she basically said that what she loved about her ebook was that actually she felt the recipes were actually not only doable but real. You know, they were something that she would want to cook when in many cookbooks they don't really I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You open a cookbook, like, and it's, I like Marcella Hazan's cookbook, and there's like two other and I two other cookbooks I work from. Other than that, I don't usually pick up a cookbook.
Right.
You know,
I use Thomas Keller's polenta recipe from the Ad Hoc cookbook, and it's excellent. But every time I use it, I have to snap a picture of it and then take my phone into the kitchen with me anyway, because that book is beautiful and huge. It takes up like this entire counter that we are like sitting at. Pieces. So it's like I'm using my phone anyway.
Yeah, so it's also because we already have all these chefs participating in the event, and afterwards you should definitely talk about Sam's head cheese.
Gonna talk. All right, Jack, let's take a break, and when we come back we're going to talk about head cheese and how you go about making it at home.
Today's break song is called Balloons by me, Jack Inslee. This is Sharp and Hot.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Okay, we're coming back. Was that on air? Amazing. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chef Emily coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Welcome to Sharp and Hot. Joining me in the studio is Sam Barbieri, chef and owner of Waterfront Ale House and Heritage Radio's own Jimmy Carbone, host of Beer Sessions. So Ann and I have been working this. We've made this year the year of the listener audience, like tribe building. And I want people to feel like we are here. We're in it together. Yeah. I share my failures. They share their successes. And so one of the things we have been doing is giving people recipes and then encouraging them to take a picture and use the hashtag Sharp and Hot on Instagram and show us what they did. And we did this with Hans Rockenwagner right before Christmas. And a listener made the recipe and put it up on Heritage and or up on Instagram, rather. And it was like, someone's listening. I'm so excited. It was not a particularly easy recipe. And it was not particularly inviting. It was a giant, it's called Kaiserschmarrn, a pan-sized pancake where you flip the whole thing. Mine was a disaster. I posted a picture. And it was delicious and fun. And I really, really liked doing it. So I asked you, Jimmy, for a recipe from your cookbook to share, and you shared Sam's head cheese. So Sam, the first ingredient, and people can go to sharpandhot.com right now and see the recipe.
And it's beautifully photographed too. I like
beautiful
it.
Photograph. The whole gorgeous. Book is beautifully photographed.
I have to say.
The first ingredient is a
pig's head.
Pig's head. One pig's head cleaned, split, right? Split.
We split it because I take the brains out.
And now is the brain poisonous?
No. No, but the brain is delicious with poached eggs.
Okay. So then why?
Well, like scrambled eggs. You can put the brains in with scrambled eggs. It's really nice. Oh, it doesn't really go into the head cheese too much.
Do the brain, the brains cook really fast, too.
Yeah.
And also eyeballs removed.
The eyeballs are removed because people don't like to see them. Although I have garnished a couple plates with the eyeballs.
So I will say that every summer, my husband and I have a hootenanny at our house out in New Jersey, and we have smoked pig heads because we've found that we say we're going to smoke a pig, but what people really want is ribs and pulled pork. But there's also like a grotesque factor of having a whole animal that I love, and most people want to see the head because you want to be nose to nose with this animal.
Absolutely.
So we now do, we smoke a head, a couple of butts, and a couple racks of ribs, and that's our barbecue. And everyone is perfectly satisfied. No one's asking us where, you know, where the missing pieces are. So that being said, I've worked with a number of pig heads, and they are kind of a human analog when you're standing in your kitchen taking the meat off of the jaw.
Yeah, they are.
Like it feels like. But it's weird to me that the eyeballs are off. Like, that's what's off-putting to people.
Yeah, like not like the cheek.
Oh, the cheeks are so good.
The cheeks are the best part.
They're
that's
so
why
good.
When we cook a whole hog, we just leave the head on there, and you dig your hand in there up into the cheek, and that's like melting your mouth. That's Yeah.
So, awesome. All right. So we're going to give this. Let's walk people through the recipe. Okay. You got it at home. You take the two halves of your pig head. Is it a particular size, weight by weight pig head that you
it
need?
It depends on what you can get from your butcher.
Okay. It's funny you should mention that because we are about to call my butcher and we're going to order a pig's head so that listeners can hear what it sounds like. And I'm going to do this this weekend. So they can stand by on that.
Most of the commercial pigs that they're butchering now are probably dressed weight around 250 to 300 pounds.
Okay. It's a big animal.
So you're getting a big pig head. If you're fortunate enough to go to a real farmer's market where we source the pigs from, you can get them anywhere from 100 to 200 pounds.
So reasonable.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of my biggest pot. My biggest pot can hold the pig's head that I'm going
to
end up with.
Well, that's the best thing to do is to split it in half because it'll fit into a pot, especially at home.
Okay, so now we split it in half. We put it in the pot, cover it with water, right?
Yeah, but we cure them for a day as well.
Okay.
We have a simple way to do it is like salt and the French four spice.
Right, yeah, or cuts, de Provence.
Cut the piece.
Oh, yeah. Okay, thyme.
Like what you would use in a regular pate.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Let it sit overnight and then wash it and then put it into the water. Into the water, I'd put a little white wine or a little beer, whatever's open in the fridge works. A little bay leaf, some onion, or a little mirepoix.
Okay. And this can all just kind of be hacked up. It's not getting served. It's not getting used.
No,
it doesn't have to be
hacking
beautiful.
Anything up until it's tender enough to fall off the bone.
Okay, but the vegetables, I mean.
Yeah, the vegetables. No, the vegetables are not going to go in the finished product. You're flavoring the broth to add the flavor to the meat itself.
Okay.
Once the meat is tender, and you're probably going to look at a simmer of about 4 to 5 hours.
Okay.
Take it out. Pull everything off the bone. Reduce the stock till it's very gelatinous.
Okay. Overnight? Like if I just leave it on low overnight?
Well, what I do is I take the meat, get it back to room temperature, reduce the stock. We put it in a loaf pan, like a little bread pan.
Mm-hmm. Same one that I make banana bread in.
Right. Yep. Correct. And pour the stock on top of it and then let it gelatinize overnight.
All right. Now, it's just the natural gelatin.
It's the gelatin because
that's
the head
out of the bones.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. We don't add any other gelatin anywhere else. What I also do, depending on how much you want to make, you can add the tails in there.
Mm-hmm.
You add the ears. The only thing I wouldn't put in there is the brains.
All right. Because you're saving
that
for something else.
We chop up the snouts too.
All right.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the snouts. So, I think snouts are coming back.
Sometimes, if you have it laying around, you can add a few pieces of bacon.
Mm-hmm. That's usually not laying around in our house. I've trained my 2-year-old that bacon's called meat snacks.
Some bacon, like a big chunk of bacon.
Okay.
Not sliced bacon.
Okay.
And pork shoulder.
And you put this all in
the
boiling pot.
Slice of pork shoulder. I boil it all together with the head. Yeah. Only because adding the pork shoulder is going to give you a little bit more meat.
Right, okay.
And less gelatin.
All right, Jack. Let's call Nugent's. Let's order a pig head. Because I know there are people who are going to do this at home. I just know. At least one person.
Yeah, this is going to
It's the process takes a long time.
That's all right. It's winter.
You know, it's a few days, yeah.
It's, yeah, but
got
it's
got nothing
winter.
Else to do but light a fire. Drink a beer.
And the beginning of every barbecue event with Sam, for breakfast, he'll give you a taste of his head cheese. And a Belgian sour beer.
Prime.
Oh, hey, this is Chef Emily calling. Who's this?
Lou, this is Lou.
Hey, Lou. Listen, you are live on air on sharpandhot.com right now and Heritage Radio Network, and we are in the studio talking about how to make head cheese, and I wanted to order a pig's head from you so that my listeners can hear what it sounds like, because it's a little intimidating to order a pig's head. Is that all right?
Absolutely. No problem.
Okay, so I'd like to come and pick it up on Saturday morning.
Okay.
And I'm in the studio with me is Chef Sam Barbieri, whose recipe this is. So Sam says that I need to have the pig's head split and the eyeballs.
Right, okay, we'll split it right in the center, right down.
All right.
They run anywhere from 10 to 14 pounds.
All right. So,
and you have a pot big enough for that to do it? Or
I'm almost certain I have a pot big enough. Do I get a choice, or is it somewhere between 10 and 14?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to say anywhere. Like I say, depending on when to slaughterhouse, but it's anywhere from 10 to 14. I mean, I could try to request something small. Is that what you have in mind?
Yeah, if you could do something small on the smaller side, or quarter the pig's head when you get, if it looks like it's huge. You know,
if
it comes in,
I'll see what I can do for you.
All right. And I'd like the eyeballs and the brains removed.
Okay. Absolutely.
Simple enough.
Simple enough.
And what else?
Sam, is there anything else?
Save the brains, because I like them. I love to cook them with eggs.
Okay, so can you save the brains for me? Because I'm going
to... Absolutely. I happen to like them also.
All right, so we're going to scram. This is going to be an adventurous Saturday at the penis, Jay Peterson.
Pig's brains.
All right.
That's because you get hungry when you're cooking, so you have to eat something.
You got to eat something. Why not pig's brains? I mean, if you got them anyway. All right,
okay,
so...
Saturday morning, we'll have it here for you?
That sounds perfect.
Okay, very good.
Great. Lou, thank you so much. And say the name of your meat shop one more time so everybody gets to hear it. It's my favorite.
It's Nugent's Prime on Speedwell Avenue.
In Morris Plains, New Jersey.
In Morris Plains, yes.
All right, cool. I'll see you Saturday morning.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Bye, Lou.
Thanks, Lou.
Bye.
Okay, everybody. See?
I love this.
Not that intimidating. You just call your local butcher and ask for a pig's head.
Or you go to a farmer's market.
Or you go to the farmer's market. So in out by me in Marstown area, New Jersey, our farmer's markets shut down from, and they're going to be closed now until about June. So I have to come into New York City, and I have to say I don't have all that much discipline about doing it. But that meat market that we just had on the phone, I'll tell you a funny story about them. They opened about a year ago, and we went in, and we were so excited to have like an actual butcher owned by like a butcher family. And my husband said, "Is your meat local?" And the guy went, "Oh, well, no, not really." And my thought was like, "Well, if it's the same as what I can get at Stop and Shop." And then he finishes his sentence. He says, "Yeah, it's mostly from Pennsylvania." I was like, that counts. That counts as local.
Absolutely. I just cooked a pig at a farm out in Pennsylvania a couple months ago. And Mennonite farmers, they take great care with the products that they prepare.
Yep.
So if you can always support a local farmer, or get your small local butcher shop that you love to support their local farms. It's always great.
Yeah, it's a real passion project. And I tell people the rule, my rule of thumb is I don't buy four-legged animals if they're fluorescently lit in a supermarket.
Yeah.
So chicken and turkey, I got to draw the line somewhere. But for pigs, beef, I go to my butcher. And their slaughterhouse is in a place called Green Village, which around that now has grown this very, very wealthy area, Summit, Chatham, very fancy area in New Jersey. And in the middle of it is Green Village, where is their slaughterhouse. And I just love that idea that there are still some holdout real slaughterhouses.
That would be interesting if you asked Lou actually where, like, not just from Pennsylvania, but, like, if he has a relationship with those farms. You know what I mean?
I'll do that Saturday morning. I'll report back. Yes, Jimmy?
I know where you're going with this, because that's one reason we did the Pig Island event to begin with in the ilikepig.com recipe ebook, is that there's a butcher near me, like my butcher guys, East Village Meat Market, the same thing where, you know, they're making traditional Eastern European products, hams, kielbasas, they smoke items, but they're only buying more like commercial, you know, meats. And over the years, we'd have like a pig crisis where we'd have a pig coming from a farm, or at one time a half cow, and they have great butchering skills. So they were able to take the delivery of these animals and butcher them and brine them and store them as we needed. And over time, they've really become to appreciate that. And there's a product that they actually sell. There's head cheese and there's larda, which is the cured lard. And I was really proud, because after this year's Pig Island, the guys at East Village Meat Market said, "Well, we actually sell lard, you know, cured lard to our regular customers, and they actually want it to be from, you know, a local farm pig." So Flying Pigs Farm up in Shushan, New York, ships down a couple hundred pounds of lard to this meat market. So it's the first product they're using for their regular products that's from a farm.
That's
so
awesome.
That's the whole process. Awesome. Is, you know, you're having this conversation about pig heads. At some point, he's probably going to get a pig head more likely from a farm than he is from a commodity producer.
Right. So can you tease Pig Island 2015? Do you know any details yet?
We're looking at approximately September 12th, which is the Saturday after Labor Day, which is when we do it. And the last 2 years we've been at the Red Hook Waterfront in Brooklyn with a great supporter in IKEA. So we're probably going to be back. We haven't signed a contract yet, but we're looking at September 12th. And that's a great event. And guys like Sam, people come with their barbecue rigs, and you know we're working with Flying Pigs Farm and some of the local farmers. So
I met you when I was fresh out of culinary school at either the first or second Pig Island because I was working with Mary Cleaver from Pig
Table. That's right.
And I
we
met
go
you
way back,
and I was so starstruck. Everybody was like, "That's Jimmy Carbone."
Oh really?
Like, oh my goodness!
I thought it was that's Mary Cleaver. She's pretty hot, and that's Sam Barbieri. Yeah.
No, it was really it was a great event.
Yeah.
Can I give a shout out to some of the chefs?
Oh please.
So it's like some of the better, like Kathy Irway, who's an author, at the first Pig Island, she did a really great dish that's been picked up. It's a pork char siu.
Right, yeah.
And she had it with little pork buns. Doug Kyle's from New Jersey. He's a in the competitive circuit. He's got ribs within rub, so we've got different guys. Jimmy's number 43. Joe Tobias, this Joe and Mrs. Doe, they've had their great, it's a lard biscuit recipe that it's in our book, and it's also been in the New York Times, some great people. King Fajanakong, he's of Kuma Inn and Umi Nam. He's got some great dishes that he's done, like these kind of like Philippine little like spring rolls.
Yeah, yeah.
Ground pork, you know. And just fun people we've met over the years. Elizabeth Shula, who was one of the co-founding chefs of Salty, you know, Salty in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
About a year and a half ago, she moved up to Cooperstown, and we did a little barbecue event with her up there. So she's got a recipe. So a lot of great people. And also Ovelia in Queens, Peter and Chris Janakis, they've come almost every year, and they make this little spit over charcoal that's like kind of hand-turned. And, you know, there's all these great cultures there. There's Mexican chefs, you know, the Italians and Greeks. And it's just such a great event. But the main thing is that the ebook was meant to represent what they're doing and showcase all the chefs. So I'd say go to ilikepig.com. It's only $1.99.
It's only $1.99. And I'm going to confess, there was part of me that was like, ugh. Which I get for 99-cent apps for like that will manage my entire life. And I'm like, ugh, do I really have to spend a dollar on this? Because I'm like falsely programmed to think that everything should be free. Then you get a free popover recipe and it's terrible.
There you go.
$1.99, you get this beautifully photographed book. It lives on your computer. There's a little bookmark icon. You can bookmark the things that you like, and the recipes are totally approachable. What your friend said is completely true. They're approachable.
I really think it's the future. I mean, you know, if you're already going online looking up, you know, different sites for recipes.
Right.
You're going to have an ebook right there.
And
on
I had
your
to
phone.
Like therapy myself a little bit. Like it's $1.99, Peterson.
Like,
pull yourself
add some
together.
Value. We got it. Let it go.
So it's really a wonderful accomplishment. Congratulations, everyone. ilikepig.com. Download a copy because you are going to make the head cheese. Take a photograph, put it up on Instagram, hashtag sharp and hot. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at Chef Emily P. You're on Twitter, Jimmy?
Yeah, at Jimmy Pots and Pan.
Are you on Twitter, Sam?
Sam's Waterfront.
At Sam's Waterfront.
Sam's Waterfront.
Ann Hogan at underscore
Rebel
underscore,
Milk.
Rebel Milk. But there's an underscore.
There's an underscore. You'll find it.
If you leave it out, there's another Rebel Milk out there, and she occasionally gets my tweets that I mean for you.
Oh, all right, guys. Rebel underscore Milk. Find me.
I've apologized. She hasn't. She
I promise it'll
apologized.
Be fun.
And thanks to Nugent's Prime and Lou for taking the call on air today. And until next week, everybody, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.